This is The Headline with Brandon Waltons, bringing you the biggest stories from across Texas. The Headline gives you the news you need to be an informed citizen.
Well, hello, everybody. Happy Friday. Thank you for joining us on The Headline. I'm Brandon Waltons, managing editor of Texas Scorecard. We're going to take a look at what has and really kind of mostly what hasn't happened this week in the legislature is they've already now are past the halfway mark of this 30-day special session that they've been sent down here for Austin to do. Of course, as we know, Democrats have left town, have been enabled by Republicans to be able to leave. They've now been gone for 11 days, halting any progress on some of those big issues. We'll talk a little bit about those later, but first I've got Jeremy Kitchen, our Capitol correspondent. Jeremy, thanks for being here this morning. And before we talk about the special session, I know there's a lot to talk about there, and I'm being a little sarcastic because they really haven't done a whole lot. But before we talk about that, there was an interesting announcement earlier this week. You had Governor Greg Abbott on a radio show up in DFW on the Mark Davis show, telling him that, talking about, you know, child gender modification legislation that was killed in the House multiple times during this session. And he told Mark Davis when asked, you know, why isn't that one of the items that lawmakers are being called back to address? He said, quote, "I'll be candid with you. I'll tell you what everybody knows." And that's the chances of those protections passing during the session in the House of Representatives was nil.
Right. It's interesting that he readily admits that, given that there were so many people during the regular session that made it sound as if it wasn't their fault, right? Like this wasn't the case. It should also be noted that this is a Republican Party of Texas legislative priority, and Republicans have a majority.
It certainly wasn't a piece of legislation that was out of, you know, left field, right? This is something we've talked about a lot. We talked a lot about during the session. We've talked, we've got our video exposing this issue, talking about saving James Younger that we've got up on our website as well. I mean, this was not a surprise issue. And yet, this is also kind of one of the first times you've seen Governor Greg Abbott out there talking about it in any sort of public way.
That's correct. I mean, if I recall correctly, the only other time he's mentioned it was way back, I want to say it was 2018, maybe, when there was a tweet saying him and I believe the Attorney General's office, they're looking into it. And that was the only other time he'd mentioned it.
Right. And ever since then, he had been really, really silent, even as he was making priorities, emergency priorities during the session, things like bail reform and rural broadband expansion. You really didn't hear anything in his State of the Union or State of the State, rather, or any time during session about this issue. Now he's actually talking about it. Now he said he said this on an interview on Monday. He said that he had some solution up his sleeve, some sort of, I don't know if it's going to be a directive, an executive order. We've certainly seen a lot of those from the governor over the past year and a half. Saying that he's going to try to achieve the same thing through that. Of course, it's, you know, Friday right now as we're doing this. It's just past 11 o'clock. We haven't seen it yet. Possibly could come out today. Possibly could come out next week.
Correct. We don't know what we don't know, right? It's the assumption would be that he'll direct an agency or give some sort of executive order to say that, but we don't know. But it should be noted, even though the legislature is in session, of course, busted quorum and the House paralyzed, it was not an issue he made on the agenda for the special session.
Right. Well, you still have grassroots organizations. You got a coalition of groups and people who have been requesting that the governor add that to the special session. Of course, some of those efforts right now on hold as they're literally waiting for the session to be, you know, resume again. But certainly something. But again, as he said, the governor, I guess, does not think it can pass the House. Interestingly, you had State Representative Tan Parker, I saw, also telling Mark Davis, that he thinks that if the governor put it on the call, that the House would pass it. Which one is correct? I don't know. The fact is that they had the opportunity to do it earlier this year, and they didn't.
Several times.
Yeah. So some of this talk now we see from the governor on this issue, right? I don't think you can't look at it in a vacuum. The fact of the matter is right now Governor Greg Abbott is facing a primary election in 2022. And you've got now three declared candidates up against him. That's Chad Prather, Alan West, and Don Huffines, that have been really swinging at him on a number of issues, maybe most notably the border.
Correct, yeah, which I assume explains why it seems, at least over the last really month and a half, that Governor Abbott has tried to put more emphasis on the border. It should be noted, yet again, it was not a priority during the regular legislative session. It was not a, he did not make it a priority of his own. So.
And now we actually see that being one of the items that lawmakers are supposed to be working on. We've also seen him, we've talked about him going down to the border, him talking about building the wall, having Texas build the wall, even as legislation was ignored during the session. But you have an article up this week that Jacob Asmussen wrote, kind of looking at some of these big plans that some, I mean, these are really big plans. You look at the plan by Don Huffines, by Alan West, some of these others, to, you know, shut down the border, to send National Guard troops. They're all a little different. But the main point is that you've got a lot of people challenging him from the right on this right now. And it'll be interesting to see how he responds.
Absolutely. And it's, again, one of those unknown sort of things, right? He's making a kind of a big show, if you will, about things that are planned, right, to do, to include a potential border wall. It's unclear how much of that will actually get done or not, right? And it's unclear whether any additional, you know, kind of logistical support and law enforcement, that sort of thing, which he asked over a month ago, will actually be seen and actually do what it is he set out to do. We don't know yet.
And property taxes as well, right? I mean, this is an issue that he's being pushed on by all sides. Specifically, I think I saw a billboard just with Don Huffines, one of his challengers, saying, you know, to eliminate property taxes. This is something that he's being pushed on as well.
Absolutely. You may recall, not last legislature, not in the 87th, but the session before that, they made a big deal out of property tax reform, right? Passed a bill sweeping, kind of limiting the amount in which your appraisals, your basically your property taxes can be appraised and go up. Made big head of that, but they did not provide. There was a property tax relief fund, but what should be noted is that it didn't really provide relief because the rate in which taxes were going up, the burdens were higher than the relief. And so Texans, especially since that time, have seen their property tax burdens increase. We wrote an article today or this week where we talked about how Texas then was ranked 7th in the nation for the highest property tax burdens. It's now ranked 6th. And so they have not, even though it's on the special session call now, it was not on the emergency agenda during the regular session. They did not allocate any additional money to property tax relief during the regular session, and Texans are still complaining.
I mean, it's a very dubious distinction when you're up there with states like New Jersey and some of these others. And even some people make the point, well, at least Texas doesn't have an income tax. Well, the fact is that you actually look at the states that there are a number of states that have neither a property tax nor an income tax. Sure. I think New Hampshire's one that comes to mind. And so that's not really an excuse for lawmakers not to act on this. Okay, let's go back to the Capitol. Let's talk about the special session, as it were, that's underway. We know that to set the stage here, just real quick, you need 100 people, 100 out of 150 people, two-thirds of them to be there to show up. A week and a half ago when Democrats left, the chamber was left with 80 members. Now it looks like, at least from some reports from some lawmakers, that you had Ernest Bales said this, that he's, by his count, by his information, there are currently 94 representatives there, as a few Democrats have trickled in. And it's been interesting to see, you've had a number of them come back, people like Harold Dutton, but some of them, like Philip Cortez, really got a lot of heat, especially from the left wing of his party and his colleagues.
Right. He was, of course, one of those that very publicly was in Washington, D.C., with the majority of the Democrat caucus that's up there. He is, of course, notably also a chairman of a House committee, the Urban Affairs Committee. I would say kind of within the circle of Dade Phelan, if you will, made big hay coming back. His quote said something to the effect of, like, me and a handful of other Democrat colleagues are in negotiations, basically, with the Andrew Murr, the author of the Election Integrity Bill, which supposedly is the public kind of impetus for them breaking quorum. And it's unclear what those negotiations look like. But he caught flack from some of those that still remain in D.C., saying publicly that they didn't know he was leaving. So there might be a break in the ranks, right?
There could be. I mean, we'll see in the next few days. It looks like if you look at the House's schedule right now, and they've announced what it will be throughout Monday, They're gaveling in or have already gaveled in at 11 a.m. today. They plan on doing so at 10 a.m. tomorrow, 2 p.m. Sunday, and then they're back 2 p.m., I think, Monday.
That's right.
That kind of plan suggests that they do not necessarily expect Democrats to show back up, or at least show back up in great, great numbers. But look, if this 94 number is to be believed, all you need is six, right?
I think it's important to note, too, because I got this question last week, in that we don't know the exact number, which is interesting in and of itself, but that's because there is no, like, because there's not a quorum, there's literally no requirement that they take attendance every day.
Yeah.
It's just missing lawmakers, when they come back, they're encouraged to register with the House Journal clerk to say that, yes, I am in fact here. But we, as the public, have no record of that. So short of sitting in the gallery, or, you know, if it is to believe that, that lawmakers are telling me the exact numbers, right, we don't know.
Right. And so, you know, there could potentially be less people there, you know, who's to say. But I will say, you know, you look at what the Democrats have been doing in D.C., it does seem like they've really had quite a week, right? I mean, you've got six of their members right now, like more than 10% of the people who went, coming down, contracting COVID-19, despite the fact, of course, that they all are vaccinated and we're supposedly supposed to be immune from that.
Sure.
You've got six of them down with COVID right now. And then not only that, but you've actually seen a reluctance from Joe Biden, the White House, right now, to meet with them.
I think one of the lawmakers, I think it was Richard Raymond, representative there out of Laredo, that did go and bust quorum, expressed some reluctance and his kind of dismay that they haven't, in effect, had a meeting, a Zoom meeting even, right?
Yeah.
Anything. They met with, of course, Vice President Kamala Harris, a few kind of congressional leaders and what have you. But I think the target was probably to get President Biden on board, and they haven't had that happen yet.
Exactly. So it's always, right, it's always important to have an end game. Right now, I think that end game's a little muddy for the Democrats. But, of course, the clock is ticking, especially on this Article 10 funding for the legislative branch, which expires September 1st.
Right.
So will they come back in time for that? And will they? Will Republicans force them to pass conservative legislation, or are they going to just, you know, give it up?
Sure. Well, I think the fear is that in order to kind of good faith negotiations, as they call it, would be that there is got to be some sort of what's known as kind of watering down policies, right?
Uh-huh.
Like, how do you bring these folks back to the table? I think the assumption is that you're going to give them something, you're going to throw them some bones. And what does that look like? Does that come at the dismay of some of the activists that have been fighting for things like election integrity forever, you know, things they could have gotten done in the regular session?
Sure. Not every Democrat wants to come back from Washington, D.C. I'll note this. You have State Representative Michelle Beckley, perhaps best known for her blue hair. She's up from Carrollton area, announced literally while the Democrats were up there, you know, supposedly fighting this election integrity bill, announced she wants to run for Congress. She wants to stay up there.
Her announcement video was interesting because it looked like it was literally filmed in her hotel room that she was staying in. That's right. She announced she's running for Republican Congressman Beth Van Dyne's seat. And it's kind of unclear as to what that means in the grand scheme of things, and whether she just went up there for that purpose or decided while she was up there for that to happen.
It does create a potential, you know, election domino effect here where, you know, her seat will be open and, some others will. And then you've got, of course, the fact that we don't know before redistricting what those districts are going to look like.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Interesting to see that staying.
One of the calculations might be, right, in that, like, her last two election cycles since being first elected were very close in a seat where she defeated the incumbent, Ron Simmons. I think it was by 2 or 3 percentage points.
Yeah, very
slim.
Her
last election cycle, the Republican in that race, Rhonda Thymich, Kronda Thymich. She narrowly lost by 2 or 3, you know, points. And so, you know, going into redistricting cycle, to your point, that might be the calculation.
Right. Well, this has really been a big fundraising opportunity, it would seem,
for
Democrats, for some Republicans, too. I mean, you've seen Republicans trying to fundraise and get a little attention off of this whole circus as well.
It is notable, right? Like, during the regular session, there's a moratorium on fundraising. You can't do it during the special session. There's nothing that prevents that.
Yeah, so they're on the floor and they're also asking for money,
right.
and that's what they do in a special session. So We'll see. Maybe they'll come back next week. Maybe we'll have more to talk about on sure. that front. But thanks for filling us in on that. Before we go, I want to make a few announcements. If you haven't already marked your calendar or gotten your tickets, December 4th, we've got the Conservative Leader Awards. Those are happening in Irving, Texas. Go ahead and head to Facebook or Twitter, I think right now, and there should be a special discount code there. Good for this weekend only. You can get your tickets at a pretty significant discount, okay? I don't think the tickets are getting cheaper than this. If you're going to go, and you're going to want to go, it's basically, it's a great reunion with the grassroots folks across the state, then now's the opportunity to go ahead and grab those tickets right now. Again, head to Facebook or Twitter for a discount code. We've got a whole series of podcasts here, including This Week in Texas with Jeremy Kitchen, The Luke Macias Show, some other programs up at TexasScorecard.com. Always encourage you to check those out. And I want to say hello to folks watching. We've got Tiffany and Steph tuning in from Deer Park, Lynette watching from San Angelo, Deborah from Rosenberg, Marissa watching from Virginia, outside Texas, foreign country there. Jason watching from Dallas, Angela tuning in from DFW, Maggie, of course, watching from Burleson. As we go out here, I want to end the show by showing you, you know, we've been at work. I'm sure you've been at work. Let's end the show here. Show you a little bit of what the House has been up to over the last couple weeks. Have a great weekend.
Rule 5, Section 8, the chair is signing a form that grants permission to each of you who have verified your attendance to leave the chamber. Today's permission slip are yellow. The House will stand in these.
Today's permission slips are green. Today's permission slips are cherry. The House will stand in these.
The slips are prairie sky blue from deep in the heart of Texas. The House will stand in these. Today's permission slips are Caprock Caliche. Today's permission slips are Harvest Grape. The House of Sanities. Today's permission slips are Whataburger Orange.
Thank you for listening to The Headline from Texas Scorecard. We're live every Friday at 11 a.m. on the Texas Scorecard Facebook page to talk about the biggest stories of the week, so check us out there or listen to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, whatever platform you prefer. And while you're there, you can also check out the ever-growing line of podcasts and programming provided by Texas Scorecard.